Welcome back. Mike Warren Thomas here. It's Naturally Green at SaverLife.com. And this has been a crazy week in many ways, but in the world of insects, maybe even crazier because the murder hornets, that nest that was found out in the state of Washington near the Canadian border, was ticking time bomb, it appears. So it's been fun to follow the story from a distance and not have to worry about them here at this point. But this nest that they found, you sort of imagine, a bee's nest, a honeybee's nest, or, honeycombs and, thousands of bees. But I'm used to honeybees. Not that I've maintained them, but just I've learned more about them than other bees in general, I guess. And you hear about the swarms that leave because the hive splits and the queen goes and takes some of the worker bees with her and set up a new hive. But this murder hornet nest, and by the way, for those that haven't followed the story, they're called murder hornets because of what they do to bees, honeybees in particular. They just kill them all in a nest and eat the young, I guess. It's kind of crazy. They can kill people, but that's relatively rare from Asia. So murder hornets, they're huge. They're like an inch and a half long. It would be very scary to see one of these. We don't see hornets that big. There might be a couple of them that I've seen that don't look anything like this or elongated that are really big. And we just hopefully we'll never see these murder hornets, which is why they're being so careful trying to find these nests on the Pacific Northwest. But this murder hornet nest, they took the tree down and they couldn't get to the bees or the hornets that were inside the tree very well. They vacuumed out what they could. So they cut the tree down and brought the piece of the trunk with the nest in it back to their lab and cut it open. And they found something like 200 queens in various stages of growth, and they said, it was within days potentially of some of these queens starting to leave the nest. They would overwinter in the ground or somewhere, and then start their own nest next year. So there were going to be a lot more nests of these murder hornets, which is why they're working hard to find any other nests that may have become established. And there were a couple of sightings in, just across the Canadian border, so they continue to try to trap and follow up on these murder hornets. But hundreds of queens. Now, I don't know if the same thing happens in the murder hornet nest, but we're reading about honeybees, and the worker bees feed the queens that are, it's really a process of a certain food that goes to a larva that causes them to develop into queens. It's called a royal jelly, and they feed that in a honeybee nest. They feed that to, I guess, 10 or 20, and one queen emerges and effectively kills the rest of them. So maybe that's what happens in this murder hornet nest, but it sounded like from what they found that there were quite a few queens that were pretty mature and and were more likely to fly away rather than, like the honeybees where one queen kills the other potential queens. It's crazy and kind of fun to follow. Again, it would be less fun to follow if they were here in our area. But the fact that they're all the way across the country makes me worry a little less about these murder hornets. So lots of stories about them online, videos you can see. And it's the destruction that they can cause to honeybees and potential problems that they just in having them around is one of the reasons that we work so hard to keep invasive species from expanding and getting to a point where there's no way to control them. This murder hornet is the small enough numbers that maybe we're just fooling ourselves, but that we're still thinking that we can keep it from becoming established here in the United States and in Canada. Another insect that we've been following, the spotted lanternfly, which is much closer to us. It's in Pennsylvania, quite established in Pennsylvania, actually. And this past week, I was, a week ago doing the gardening show, I was thinking that the spotted lanternfly was kind of done for the season. We've had some pretty cold nights, and I figured that the adults have been killed, the eggs would hatch next summer, and we'd have to start looking again. But apparently one was found in Ithaca, in the Fall Creek neighborhood, and in investigating that, we discovered that potentially a juvenile had been found this summer, but in that same area, but it had not been reported by the DEC because it was not a confirmed sighting. The homeowner killed the insect, and I got a chance to talk to him, and he said that it was kind of strange or fortuitous, perhaps, because the day he saw this insect, a little sort of red with black spots, little, looks like a beetle. It doesn't look like a, you know, like a ladybug, but looks like a beetle. And that same day, some friend of his from Pennsylvania, I think, sent him photos of the spotted lanternfly life stages, and he recognized it. But you know, the DEC has to verify these and see them. So this apparently was unverified, and so when I heard that news, I actually went down to Ithaca this week, past week, and did some scouting in that Fall Creek neighborhood, which is not far from the Ithaca Farmers Market. So it's not up on the hill with Cornell or Ithaca College, but you know, down in the city of Ithaca, and found some of the trees that they really like, this Alianthus or Tree of Heaven, but did not find any spotted lanternflies. And now we'll see. That is kind of ground zero right now in the Finger Lakes in upstate New York for the spotted lanternfly, with two life stages potentially found. Again, I didn't confirm this first, the juvenile one in July, but it's a serious cause for concern. And the spotted lanternfly can do millions of dollars of damage to the wine business, the hops that are grown in our area, and orchards, and many other trees. But wine, the wine industry in particular. So, as I've said for weeks now, look it up, get familiar with it, and I'll remind you next summer as we have to start looking again. And you may, they may still be out there this fall, protected from the freezes or frosts, and still laying egg masses, which is what overwinters. We've had temperatures in the 20s, but we've got lots of plants that have survived that. I have a petunia that's blooming in my backyard. Not only one flower, so, I mean, it's not showy, but there's really no way this petunia should be still alive. And my only guess is, because it's not near the house, foundations can warm the area around them, but it is basically leaning over the driveway, and perhaps the driveway is retaining a lot of heat from the day. That's a relative term. I mean, it's not like it's 90 degrees and retaining that heat, but retaining enough heat to moderate the temperatures around it and keep this petunia from freezing. Really, this petunia should have been long dead by now, and it's a beautiful, vibrant pink, this one flower at least. And roses, lots of roses still in bloom. In fact, if you are feeling like, like winter's almost here, kind of is, but if you want to make the fall seem longer, extended a little bit, you should head over to the Maplewood Rose Garden, because if that's anything like my yard and some of my neighbors' yards, there'll be hundreds of roses still blooming in the Maplewood Rose Garden. And I'm sure there's lots of them. I don't know how many. Hopefully I'll get over there today before the wind arrives tomorrow and see what the Rose Garden is looking like. There probably won't be as many people there as there were this summer. You know, it's not the time of the year you normally go in search of roses, in mid-November. But I would bet there are lots and lots of roses in bloom. I have some old-fashioned ones blooming in my yard. Saw probably 10 different roses driving around yesterday, and a bunch of other annuals. Saw a couple dianthus flowers, a couple little million bells, which are kind of miniature petunias. Saw a viburnum with some flowers on it. Now these are stray flowers. It's not, again, not showy. Saw a myrtle plant with a purple flower on it, one of the darker variety. A lot of those are kind of blue, and this one is kind of a dark purple myrtle or vinca ground cover. So it might be fun to go explore Highland Park and see how many flowers you can find in bloom, even though it is getting to be late fall. And there's some snow, at least flurries maybe in the forecast for Tuesday. I saw a dandelion blooming yesterday also. As we get closer to winter, these stray flowers get more exciting. It's kind of fun to see them still out there and braving these temperatures somehow. And there will be a couple nights of 27 this next week, one of which is Tuesday night when potentially get a little bit of snow or snow flurries. So colder weather is on the way. And if you haven't brought in a few plants, and I forgot to get my little, I have a little tiny lemongrass plant, probably still can bring that in. And I have some geraniums that have survived this, the cold weather that we've had so far. So I may still bring a few of those in, or cuttings from them. I've got a rosemary plant to bring in. They can survive quite a few frosts and quite a bit of cold weather, but probably are not going to survive the winter outside. There's supposedly a variety of rosemary that does survive, but I'm guessing that partly depends on how severe the winter is, and you might as well bring it in and make a houseplant out of it and use the rosemary, or if you don't use it in cooking, use it just because it smells amazing. Just pinch a couple leaves and crush them in your hands, and it's like aromatherapy. Rosemary, I'm still going to bring mine in. I've got a lot of other cuttings and little plants of begonias that I brought in, put six or seven of those in one big pot. And so I've got like three pots of assorted annuals that, again, they're not going to need as much water this winter. And if I put them in little individual pots, there's a very good likelihood that they would all be dead by spring. I've just had terrible luck trying to keep them in small pots and keep them watered over a winter. So I put them in big pots, and they usually do great. All kinds of annuals to use as mother plants for next summer, next spring. If you have questions on what you could save or what you could bring in or what something is, email me, michael@saverlife.com. I'll be planting garlic over the next couple of days. I found some garlic cloves, individual cloves, that Todd Lighthouse from Lighthouse Gardens is selling by the pound. And so these are not bulbs. They're individual cloves, probably in harvesting the thousands of garlic bulbs that he harvests each year. Some of them break apart or, you know, get partly damaged, so they pull the cloves apart. And so you want to eat these sooner or plant them. And I'm going to put a bunch of these in the ground over the next couple of days before we get that those 27-degree nights, which will freeze the ground slightly, perhaps, if it gets that cold. But you can still plant garlic after that. We're going to have milder temperatures following those two cold nights. So if you want some garlic, you can look them up online, Lighthouse Gardens. You can stop. I don't know if we'll have it at the Brighton Farmers Market on Sunday, but you can order it and pick it up at the farm if he still has some available. And it's not too late at all. I saw several people posting that they were planting garlic this weekend, and you'll harvest it next July. So great plant to put in your garden. You can plant around it. My neighbor plants it very densely, and then he produces about 120 bulbs in a maybe 6 foot by 6 foot space. I mean, it's really maybe even smaller than that, but a lot of garlic in a pretty small space. He also has a lot of compost that he adds to it, and so some really, really good soil. If you're going to plant that intensively, then soil becomes even more important. Once again, I was out yesterday raking leaves, not to the street, but raking the leaves into my gardens. And this is, there's sort of two philosophies this time of the year. Rake every leaf you can away, or rake every leaf you can into your gardens. And you're going to have some great compost next year. You're going to have happier plants because of the carpet of leaves. And again, here in the city, at least, they come around once each fall and pick up the leaves, which they did last week. And then people just put them in bags and throw them away. It's a great resource, and you should rake them into your gardens, off your lawn, but into your gardens. And the only exception might be black walnut leaves, which are toxic to a lot of plants. And the stems, the leaves, the nuts, the roots of these black walnuts, you don't want these around. But other than that, you really want to try to hoard those leaves to some degree, and you'll have better soil next year, fewer weeds as the leaves cover the soil. So again, those two strategies, rake leaves out of your yard or rake them into your gardens, two approaches. There's still time to overwinter some of the bulbs, the tubers that are out there, cannas, dahlias, gladiolas. These are things that survive outside in a mild winter or near a foundation. They sometimes survive the winter, or some of them do. But you might be surprised at how many gladiolas or dahlia tubers or cannas you end up with. So when you dig them out, if you still have some, or if a neighbor does, or a friend, and they don't want them, when you dig them out, start further away than you might otherwise start, because I think it'll surprise you how they spread out, and they might have a pretty extensive root system. So you let that dry out. You cut the tops away, let the roots, those tubers, dry out, and then store them for the winter in a dark, cool, and dry place. And you've got some great tubers to start for next year. But you need to start them early. If you wait and just plant them out, you know, in mid-April or May, they're going to be way behind. So the nurseries are, you know, planting those back in, you know, in March probably. And so the ones you store this winter, ideally you put them in a pot in March, maybe break them apart, and it's that way you'll you won't be behind when it comes time to put them outside. But we had some fantastic cannas, this very simple one, just a dark red, but there are some that are sort of orange red. This is more of a pure red, and they kept blooming and blooming up until like a week ago, and finally some of the really cold weather knocked the plant down, not quite to the ground, but killed much of it. But they gave us so many flowers late in the season. Makes me more of a convert to cannas, and this happened with dahlias too quite a few years ago. I used to do a lot of classes on gardening, and I would kind of denigrate dahlias as being a lot of work, and didn't really advocate people saving them for the winter. But the last couple of decades since then, I've kind of regretted that, because I've realized just how many flowers dahlias provide in the summer, but also well into the fall, and up until recently, just some great fall color. And so I'm a big advocate now of saving those. Maybe join the Dahlia Society if you want to learn more about them, and trade some next spring, find out more about how to grow dahlias, etc. It's really a pretty amazing flower. Well, again, those bulbs are still fine in the ground, because the ground hasn't frozen. At most, in the coldest weather we've had up till now, you know, the top 16th of an inch maybe froze briefly. So the tubers underground are just fine, and time to take them out. So if you see a neighbor with them and doesn't look like they're going to dig them out, leave them a note, give them a call, send them an email, see if they're going to save their cannas, because a lot of people don't. And I ran into one guy that did save them every year, and must have had 100 pounds of them one fall that he pulled out of the ground. So they grow quickly. The tubers, again, will be much bigger than you expect probably when you dig them out. So, and send me a photo if you do some of that digging and save some of those cannas or dahlias, etc., over the winter. And, you know, then in the spring, you can start them early, and you'll have some great plants. You'll have many more of them next year. If you had one canna that you put in this year, I would venture you'll have anywhere from 6 to 12 individual plants that you could, you know, basically break the tubers apart and plant them next year. I mean, in that sense, it's kind of like garlic. You take one bulb of garlic, you might have 6 to 10 cloves. So you plant each of those cloves right now, and you'll, from that one bulb of garlic, you'll end up with half a dozen, maybe closer to 10 garlic, full garlic bulbs next summer. So these things reproduce quickly. Kind of fun to grow some of your favorite ones and trade them with other people who enjoy them. You can reach me anytime, michael@saverlife.com. Send me a photo if there's some plants you've run into here this fall that you can't identify. Someone emailed me this week about a plant that looked like grapes in their yard, and it had purple sort of clusters of purple berries, and they sort of hung like grapes, and that's a pokeweed, and it's got a very purple stem. It probably got hammered in the frosts and freezes that we've had, so right now they're looking kind of sad, but the tuber will survive and grow again next year, and it'll probably be even bigger next year. So they're a weed. They grow amazingly fast. One that I saw just recently been killed in the frost, but it was about 6 feet high and 5 feet wide. And it did look like grape clusters. They're not edible. They're sure they're particularly toxic. But they'll probably make you sick. You definitely don't want to eat them. And the birds will eat them and spread them around and the seeds around your yard. They can be used to make a dye. They're great purple, dark purple berries. So if you wanted to start an Easter project early for dyeing Easter eggs, I would harvest some of these pokeweed berries and sort of concentrate them. Just because of the freezing process, they're already a little bit dehydrated. And you could freeze them and make them into a purple dye, for Easter eggs, perhaps, or just for fun or some other project. They're very purple. Don't want to get them on your clothing. And so this time of the year, you could just cut them down because the tops are dead. And you might want to dig up the tuber while you're at it. Supposedly, they are edible for a short period when the new shoots come out of the tubers. So I read about people who would bring those tubers inside and put them in pots, and then just makes the harvesting of the shoots easier. But I'm not sure they taste that good that you want to go to all that work. So I tend to leave them when they grow, and then I'll probably take the tubers out because I don't want them to get bigger. The big tubers, they're like a huge white carrot. Again, not edible, but kind of showy. I kind of like them, but it is a weed, and they do spread by seed, not underground. So it's not wild grapes, which I did see some of a couple weeks ago. But they do look like grape clusters. So pokeweed, P-O-K-E-W-E-E-D. It's another one of those plants, if you look it up, you'll find some kind of fascinating information. On a cold winter day, it might be fun to learn more about some of these plants, and it makes you appreciate them more when they grow in your yard next year. Email me with comments and questions, michael@saverlife.com. I'll be back this morning with For Love of Food, Discover the Finger Lakes. Tomorrow, it's the grapevine at 9 a.m. Have a great day. Michael Warren Thomas here at saverlife.com.